Mr. Rosen.
First of all, I would like to thank Debbie for making the slides. And I will talk about quantum non-locality and the presence of super selection within some work I've been doing last year, or more than a year ago, so now doing together with Norbert Schulten and Nasco Sierra. So what will I talk about? I will argue somehow that entanglement is a resource, as everyone knows. But the whole point is that these resources associated somehow to constraints, namely to the fact that you're typically only allowed to do local operations in classical communication. So the hope is somehow that there are some extra constraints that there would arise some new resources. And this is exactly what happens in the case of selection rules. So we'll see that there's some new interesting non-locality issues that arise when you have extra constraints. And there are states, for example, that are non-local, but they are not entangled in some sense when you have super selection rules. And we'll show how we can use these insights to construct new cryptographic protocols such as quantum data hiding. And in the last part of the talk, I will show how you can quantify this new kind of non-locality, both in the pure and the mixed cases. So please, if you have questions, interrupt me, because I don't think I can fill 40 minutes. Okay, so what is the motivation? Quantum information theory is somehow built on this subtle interplay between one big thing that allows you to work in a huge Hilbert space that is exponentially large, but it becomes very difficult to exploit that, really, because there are heavy limitations on the possible operations, such as no cloning, the fact that observables typically tensor and things like that. But on the other hand, it's also extremely interesting, these limitations, because it allows for new applications like quantum cryptography. So it's essentially the subtle interplay that makes it so hard also to construct new quantum algorithms. But of course you're aware of that fact. Now, formally you could see, you could define entanglement theory as the study of the possible operations and conversions between states when you have locality constraints, and typically this is based on LOCC, so local operations in the presence of classical communication. Now, what is a complete obvious statement is that whenever you have a constraint, this leads to the possibility of a resource that would allow you to overcome this constraint. And the magic of quantum mechanics or quantum information theory is that this happens in the most beautiful possible way. Namely, if you have entanglement given in a quantum singlets, then this allows you to overcome completely the LOCC constraint, because you can teleport and you can. So this means that you can implement any global operation on the quantum system just by doing global operations and classical communication. So it's really a resource that lets you overcome these locality constraints. Now, simple question is now, are there some kind of other additional constraints? Because it could well be that they lead to new interesting physics and cryptographic applications. This is exactly what happens in the case of entanglement. You have this constraint, and then you look, what can I do with it, and then you come up with this cryptographic protocols, and it's especially in this kind of context that we are interested in. Like, when you have extra constraints, does it allow you to have more cryptographic, to do things in a cryptographic sense that are otherwise impossible? And the next little thing to look at are super selection rules, because this gives you exactly this extra constraints. Now, before proceeding, I would like to mention some related work. So I think that some professor in 2002 was the first one to really raise the question. And he asked, do super selection rules have implications for cryptographic protocols? The main hope was that it would allow for quantum little methods. But unfortunately, that's not even. This was proven by Myers and later by Gennady and Myers and Peskill. Namely, that in the machine is if you want to get from the personal super selection, it's not possible. So, then it was a lot of work by Howard Wiseman, especially Howard Wiseman and John Vakarovsky and Howard Barnum. And so they really argue that the notion of entanglement has really to be out when super selection is applied. And independently, we also did this kind of work I will present here, where we try to quantify these notions. Then there's also some work Steve, Terry, and Rob about the connection between superselection rules and reference frames, and this leads to a very interesting kind of applications to look at it and to interpret, let's say, reference frames as a resource. And then last, there was recently a paper of Billy Chatto's moment to help, where they sometimes show that if you have not a really superselection rules, but extra on that, if you have some kind of restrictions that you cannot have in syllabus, then you would, in principle, have security for it. But it's not a condition of security because you assume that you cannot have in syllabus. Okay, so I don't have to introduce the notion of super selection rules because many thoughts have been, excellent thoughts have been given about that, but we will consider here the simplest possible super selection rule, namely something like particle number conservation. And the whole talk when I write down browser cat, it's really a second quantization. So for example, the state 0, 1, this means that the zero, that there's one particle in the second one. So this particle number super selection rule decomposes the Hilbert space in a direct sum structure. And so this means that, for example, density operators have to be block diagonal. So it's a direct sum of blocks, and in each block there is some kind of you have constant particle number. So of course also the observables must have the same structure. This is reimposed by this super selection rule. Now the situation becomes very interesting in the distributed set, so when you have two parts, because your density operators are only constrained somehow by the global super selection rule. While the local operation and the local observables are really constrained by the local superselection rules. So and this really opens up the possibility of these new cryptographic applications. Let me brief comment on this quantum bit commitment. It's a bit unrelated to it, but it's so simple and it really illustrates very well what super selection rules and use, or what is the difference between super selection rules and the money dog fan. Now what the original proof of the impossibility of quantum bit commitments is like that. So quantum bit commitment is about let's say Alice committing something to Bob, and then she sends a state to Bob, and she does not want that Bob has any information about the state she sent. So this means if Bob should not be allowed to get any information, that the reduced density operator of the two states, so she wants to commit in 0 or 1, but the reduced density operator on Bob's side has to be equal, because otherwise Bob could have some information. But if two reduced density operators are equal, then you know that purifications, because you assume that the whole state is pure, are equivalent to a local unit transformation at Alice's side. So this immediately proves that it's impossible and when you don't have super selection rules, because Alice would have complete control of changing Psi 1 into Psi 2 by just doing a local unity transformation. Now, in terms of super selection rules, exactly the same reasoning holds. So again, you want that the state that Bob side is independent, so that let's say row 1 is equal to row 2. And again, this implies that the two purifications are equivalent, but due to this special structure of super selection rules, you can immediately infer that this local unity up to which the two states are related is just, again, a direct sum of different unities. So again, this immediately proves that we cannot have a condition secure model because we can present super selection rules. Okay, let me now move to the non-locality issues when you have super selection rules. Now, one of the immediate I will first argue that there's really some new kind of non-locality when you have super selection rules. And there are two states that we illustrate this in a very nice way. Is there some kind of So, look for example at this state, row 1. So this is really in this second quantization language. So by just applying, let's say, this partial transpose that you know, okay, so you mean you see that this state is separable. So it has a separable decomposition. And of course these states have these loss structures, so there are a lot of bunch of selections because you only have superposition between, let's say, the 0, 1 and 1, 0, and then some part 0, 0 and 1, 1. You can have incoherence kind of components, so you can have them leave in your state. Now, this row 2 is this kind of coherent state that also commutes with the partial number of states. And both of these states are not going to be separable because the second one is even written in a separable way. The distinction of the second, of course, is that it commutes with the number of operators, and this is not completely obvious to see from this picture. Now, the big surprise about these states so is that the fact that they are separable, but you cannot compare them locally by LOCC. Because if you want to write down any possible separable decomposition of these states, you would have to prepare the position between 0 and 1, and this is exactly not allowed. You cannot do that by virtue of the selection rule. So these states are separable, but they are not local because you cannot prepare them locally. As you will see later, you can even use them to so that you can use them as a resource to compose this later. Now, more importantly, you can. It's it. Yes, please.
It's one interruption. So if I want to prepare the coherent state, so I prepare one locally for this question, that's the locally apparent, and the other one locally, and I can communicate the phase. I'm not understanding why that's not allowed.
No, we really assume the partial number sub-selection. So we assume that we cannot make a superposition between 0 and 1, or say n and n plus 1. So it's more in the case of particles, so it's not, you don't have to interpret it in terms of photons, but more in terms of particles.
So when you say it cannot be prepared locally, and it cannot be prepared locally with that constraint?
With the superselection process. Well, you can easily, there's a very simple theorem that you can derive in two lines. That characterizes, let's say, all the states that you can prepare locally when you have super selection rules. And it goes like that. So, consider some kind of a depolarizing map. So, what this map does is it projects on local and partial members. And so, when the row is equal to this n of row, then you can prepare the state locally. And it's a minimum only. So it's very much related to what Steve talked about yesterday. So it's really these kind of dwellings that they also do. But the reason for that is that all your observables that you can implement locally, so the operations have to commute exactly with these with this depolarizing maps. So now if you apply this to the previous examples, so this row one, let me show you again. So there was another element there. And this row one. And if you apply this equalizing map to it, you see that it disappears. It's obviously this state is not equal to its equalized version, and hence you cannot prepare it locally. But in the case of the second example, so this coherent kind of state, what you get is that you really get an isosolid when you apply this equalizing map. So this proves that these states cannot be prepared locally, they are separable, but not local. Now let me go to some more application-oriented issues. So you could argue that the dual problem of preparing states is somehow discriminating states. And by exactly the same reasoning, you can prove that the state row and this depolarized version of row cannot be distinguished by LOCC operations. And the proof of that is again a combined proof, maybe. So if you have operations XA and XB so that you would like to use to distinguish the states, then these operations of course have to are less invalid if you apply this to depolarizing map. But by virtue of the linearity, you can put this to the right, and therefore this has to be sequential. So row and end of row cannot be distinguished locally. And I will not go into details about this quantum data hiding, because I think then you will talk about it in a very extensive way. But it's immediate from this theory that we can use these super selections for something that is impossible, that when we don't have super selections. And it is related to data hiding. So data hiding is somehow, there's a third party that gives you a quantum state to Alice and Bob, and they are not allowed to reveal, to get any information about the bit when they do local operations and classical communication. So what the third party does is somehow give them a plus or a minus to classical bit. And what you see is that the 0, 1 plus minus 1, 0, if you depolarize them, they are equal to each other. So you cannot distinguish these two states. And that's it. We can argue that these states fulfill all the requirements for the data, open data mining protocol. And this is impossible with few states and for finite dimensions of those states somehow if you don't have super selection rules. Now let me like this a bit to an experiment to see that the things I'm talking about are not just that these super selection rules really apply in the lab, and it's not just something very fancy. So, for example, you could consider some bosonic atoms in a VSC, and then the number of atoms gives rise to an effective super selection rule. Now, if you denote A, the annihilation operator of atoms in the current state of the VSC, and B, the one for atoms in an internal excited state, you could prepare, this is just a definition. And then you prepare the ground state, so acting with A, dagger to the power N, to the same thing with vacuum. And this is the ground state. And then, Charlie could apply a pair of lasers in a random configuration to implement the transformation A to A plus minus B. And this plus or minus is exactly the bit this Charlie would like to hide. Then you could adiabatically separate the atoms in the state A and B and give one part to Alice and one part to Bob. So this can be done in the lab. And then, so, because the super selection was applied, it's exactly the state 0, 1 plus minus 1, 0. So you cannot reveal anything, so both parties cannot have any information about the bit. The immediate question is now, what kind of resource would they need to get some information about this bit? And, so this leads to the concept of super selection rule induced resource. Now, imagine that they have an extra state psi A B given by this expression to their disposition. So obviously this state does not violate super selection rule because it has constant particle number big N. And then you write this psi as plus minus. So this plus minus was really this 0, 1 plus minus 1, 0. If you write this out and you rewrite terms such that somehow locally you have constant particle number, what you see is that so this term has n, small n particles, but this term also has small n particles. So what they can do is to really have to measure, for example, in this basis, 0 n plus minus 1, n minus 1 basis, and then they will completely obtain the information about the plus minus. The only problem is that at the end some part, that when there are zero particles or big n particles, then they cannot get any information. What you see is that if they get this state to their disposition, and it's, people argue that we could call this a reference frame, or but I would rather call it a resource. It allows you to get information about a bit. And the probability that you get the right information is like n divided by n plus 1. So it is a resource, but it's not complete. It's only, let's say, a complete resource in the limit that n goes to infinity, because then the probability goes to 1. And the reason for that is that there's really a big difference between these kind of resources that are associated to the super selection rule and the kind of resources that are associated to entanglement. Because in the one you have a tensor power structure, and in the other one you have a direct sum structure. And it's really due to this difference that you are not able to have a perfect kind of reference frame if you only have a finite dimensional product space in your disposition. So other kind of consequences of this difference between the direct sum and the tensor power structure is that in the presence of super selection, well, it's not equivalent anymore to have, a quantum channel or just e-bits to your disposition. Because A quantum channel, let's say, it gives you more power than just qubits and LOCC operations. While this is completely equivalent in the case of an LOCC structure was applied. You see, due to this distinction between a direct substructure and a tensor power structure. So I showed that so the state psi AB can somehow give you information, but it would argue yes, but the state contains a lot of entanglement, the left side. But it also contains some kind of resource because it involves its positions with different locally that there's the variance of your local particle numbers. You've got to ask the question, can I also reveal this bit when I have these separable but non-local states? The answer is yes. So if you're given this states in row 2, and here I mean wrote them, and really in this kind of such as it's obvious that it commutes with the particle number, the global particle number over here. And you do exactly the same measurement as before, then you see that in the limit, when alpha goes to infinity, the success of getting the information goes to 1. So really, you don't need any entanglement. It's really this non-local resource that allows you to get new information. So I think this really proves that indeed these states contain a resource because you can do something with them that you cannot do when you don't have. So the obvious question is now to try to quantify this new kind of non-locality. One of the biggest results in entanglement theory, well, of course, when no selection rules apply, is that the amount of entanglement of a pure state can asymptotically be characterized by a single number. So this means that if you have a lot of copies of the state of one state and lots of copies of another state, and somehow the local entropy of these two states matches, then you can convert them into each other, really go from one to the other and then go from the other to the original one without any loss. So it's really completely reversible. So this gives a unique way of quantifying the entanglement in pure states, pure bipartite states. Now, in the presence of super selection rules, we have two constraints, not just the locality constraint, we also have the super selection constraint. And as soon as you have it, it turns out that again two numbers are enough. So you will be able to convert, so two numbers completely characterize all the kind of non-local content of pure quantum states in the presence of super selection rules. So the next slide will be a bit more technical because I want to give you a flavor of how you do these things. So first of all, we would like to generalize this majorization criterion because, in some sense, this entropic criterion, this asymptotic criterion, is you can see that's a limit of this majorization criterion when you have lots of problems. And this majorization criterion tells you the necessary and sufficient conditions for being able to convert one state to another one by LOCC operations. The generalization to the case where super selection rules is really straightforward. So what you have is you want to look at your shift coefficients. But of course, because your state has this so your state can be divided in subspaces of, so if you look at your local reduced density operator of a state, you get a block structure. With let's say 0 particles, 1 particle, 2 particles, and so forth. And the Schmidt coefficients, so in each of these blocks you can define Schmidt coefficients. And then the theorem goes like this. So you can convert the state psi to the one chi. Even only if the Schmidt coefficients of each of these blocks is majorized by the Schmidt coefficients of each of these blocks and of the other block, I mean of the corresponding blocks in the other state. Of course, you can make it a bit more complicated by adding ancillas and shifting these blocks, but in essence, that's so this theorem again, it applies in exactly the same sense. Now, when you have many copies, this majorization criterion converges to the entropic criterion because when you have many copies of the same state, all these eigenvalues are all the Schmidt coefficients become very much related to each other, and there's just one number that will tell you whether indeed this majorization holds or not in some kind of asymptotic limit. So when you make many copies, there are two things. So first of all, this majorization will converge to this entropic criterion. This is clear. But on the other hand, there's also like the weights of these subspaces that can change. So these weights are really there, and we cannot play with them. So you have certain ways of getting these blocks, and you have this tensor, the direct sense structure, and then you take many copies of that. So what you will see is that the weight of these new blocks in this tensor, when you take many copies of this state, will become distributed in a Gaussian way. And again, so that this will exactly be the number needed to characterize this new resource. So it's really some kind of, because if these weights are distributed in a Gaussian way, then there are just two numbers that completely characterize this distribution, and it's mean and variance, and the mean will not have anything to do with non-locality, and it's exactly this variance that will quantify the non-locality of your state. So therefore we define this notion of super selection rule and use variance. And so it's somehow the variance in the local part of the number operator. So what we do is trace out, let's say, the box part, and look at your density operator. And the variance in this state, so really the variance of this number operator will tell you whether there's really a lot of this kind of shifting around of these parts. So let's say 1, like 0, 1, 1, 0 would have maximal variance in some setting. So, and you can look at this definition for Kurzweil criteria for an entanglement measure or an entanglement of domains. So it's decreasing when you do local operations of classical commutation. It is additive. It is So here I would like this notion is a bit related to the thing that John Pacaro talked about yesterday. This anthropic notion. But to my point of view, I don't understand really why. One point of view, an anthropic criterion. So what John did was get something calculate the entropy of this local. It's not exactly that, but it's related to the entropy of the local number variation. But I think that an anthropic kind of criterion only makes sense when you have tensor product section. So, because entropy is really something that is defined such that if you have two copies of the same thing, you get two times the entropy of the original thing. And here, this variance is really not defined. There's no underlying tensor product structure. You have a direct sum structure. And that's why I feel more tempted to I think this variance is the more physical kind of way of characterizing somehow this variance for when you have an underlying direct sum structure. But let me illustrate something. Okay, so I define this selection rule and use variance, but it's clear that it's not completely independent of the entanglement. So if you have a Q state, there are some relations between this super selection rules and use variance and the entanglement, and this illustrates. So these pictures illustrate that. So the region of allowed kind of variances for given entanglement are given by this ray region. This is the whole picture in the case of qubits, and the one underneath it is in the case of qubits. And the reason the rule is typically spanned by next states, Okay, so the really central theorem we would like to go to is the following. So consider any copies of state phi with entropy of entanglement E of phi and a certain given super selection rule and used variance. Then there exists an asymptotically reversible conversion of this state to another state that is somehow in the normal form. And let me explain now what these two states are. So the first term at the right side is really some kind of an EPR like that is completely unaffected by the super selection rules. Because you see that locally the variance in local numbers, in local particle number is completely zero. Because both Alice and Bob have one part, but they are just in different modes. So you see that this left side is really the kind of entanglement we know it when there's no super selection. And you can do everything with this state that you could do when no super selection would apply. So this is really the kind of general entanglement like we know it, the left side. Now, then you tensor this with a new state that is some kind of, that is defined on your original state. And this state is a Gaussian, so it's really Gaussian distributed. And it contains only a logarithmic amount, let's say, of entanglement like we know it in the general sense. So it's really separating your resources in two parts. just the antagonist, like we know it, on one hand, and then like really this kind of violence induced, this super selective induced part at the right side. So in the case of qubits, you can even it holds that this kind of super selective induced violence is always smaller than the antagonist. And then you can even write a simpler kind of interconversion. So what you have here is that any copies of your states can be interconverted to, let's say, E minus V times N copies of a general entangled state that on which no superselection goes apart. And then really this 0-1 plus 1-0. So this is like the standard unit of entanglement when you have this superselection. N plus V copies of this guy. So let's see here, Ivanoniev. So if I give you, let me first give an example. So, for example, suppose that I start with this state. So this state, yeah, I don't think you can read it, it's the square root of 1 over 6, 0, 1, plus square root of 5 over 6, 1, 0. You ask, what kind of states can I convert this one? So, what we have on this axis is the entropy of entanglement, and on this axis, this super selection rule-induced values. So it's clear that the normal EPR, like we know it, when no super selection rule applies, is this here. So this is really this 0101, let's say, plus 10101, something like that. So that the violence in local memory and local part of is 0. And this is really this EPR set, like 0-1 plus 1-0, so that has both entanglement and violence. What you can do, you can imagine this state, you get many copies, you can convert it to E minus V times copies of these EPR states like we normally have it, and V times EPR pairs like this one. And from these ones, it can go back again. So this really shows that it's really a generalization of this forward given when no such selection was applied. I don't know if I have time to go. So the proof is quite simple. So if you look at the proof of the original way you prove that when no super selection will apply, you can somehow take the same steps, but there's some small modifications. So as an example, take this state, square root of B001 plus square root of B1 minus 1-0. And then you take many copies. And you take many copies and you read out it, in a sense, somehow that all these psi's have constant local, that these psi's are somehow all maximally entangled in some sense. And so you get these binomial coefficients and things like that. And then you will restrict your attention to typical subspaces. So this is always the reasoning that you apply when you go to the asymptotic limit. And you only look at subspaces. So you define some kind of an epsilon, and for this epsilon, you look at the subspaces for which this binomial, so the weight of this subspace is larger than this. And so within this subspace, you all have somehow maximally entangled states. So maximally entangled states in this sense. So this is some kind of maximally entangled state. But the entanglement of these states depends, of course, on this small n. And so they're not all equal. But due to this majorization theorem that I showed you before, you can somehow reduce the entanglement and all. So the first n for which this is true will have the least amount of entanglement. Then it will grow, and then it will go down again. And at the end, what you want to have is really this tensor product structure. So you want somehow that the entanglement in all these subspaces is equal to each other. And this you can achieve by this majorization mechanism, because you just plug it in, you see, okay, I can do it. There exists an LLCC operation that transforms this, that somehow reduces the entanglement in all these subspaces that have too much entanglement, because I have only entanglement, there's this minus sign here. And then somehow you transfer this entanglement to some kind of register. And this is exactly what gives rise to this tensor product that we have here. And to finalize the proof, of course, you have also to prove the reverse method, the delusions. And for this, you just change, you go backwards and the reasoning, but the only thing you do is to the plus sign instead of a minus sign. And of course, in the asymptotic limits, epsilon goes to zero and everything works fine. So the proof is essentially based on this majorization criterion that we could generalize to the selection rule base, and then just sum that fix. Okay, so let me now move to the notion of mixed state entanglement. So what is, it's quite straightforward to define the notions of entanglement and violence of formation. And so the standard example is really this row one, so this separable but non-local state. It's immediately clear that the entanglement of formation in the version of superselection is just 1/2. So this proves indeed that you cannot prepare it locally because you need this. So this is more a quantitative version of this theorem that tells you which state you can prepare locally and which not. Interestingly, the real kind of physical quantity is not the entanglement of formation, but the entanglement cost. So the entanglement cost is defined as the entanglement of formation in the limit of an infinite amount of copies. And we can prove that this entanglement cost is equal to the one without superselection rules. And this is a bit surprised. So you see the entanglement cost of this state row one is obviously when you don't have superselection rules is zero. But if you only have one copy and you have superselection rules, then you really have to invest entanglement to create it. Now, in the limit of many, many copies, this is not really more. You will be able to, you don't need entanglement anymore, but you need targets. So it's clear that due to this previous theorem on few states, we really have two resources that are complementary, that are independent. So we have the entanglement resource, we have the balance resource. And it's clear this state does not contain any entanglement resource. And the proof is again very simple. So of the fact that the entanglement cost is equal to the one without superselection. So what you do is take many copies of your state, and then write down a separable decomposition of this state. But the separable decomposition will typically involve terms that are not allowed for superselection rules. But on the other hand, what we know is that the state commutes with this local particle number, the global particle number operators. So you can apply the global depolarizing map to this state and it will not change. Of course, so these projectors will map all these states that have superpositions, unallowed kind of superpositions, to superpositions that don't allow for. And then the only thing you have to do is to prove that when you map a separable state that is somehow not allowed to one of the subspaces with local particle number, that you cannot create an amount of entanglement that increases linearly in dimension. And then you have to prove this kind of theorem. If you have a separable state and you or even not a separable but a state with a certain amount of entanglement and you project it from this on subspaces with constant global particle number, then somehow you can create at most the order of log n qubits. And of course in the essence of the limit this completely vanishes because we have to divide this by n, so this is redundant. And this is the way you prove that the entanglement cost does this is an effect. Another important notion in mixed state entanglement is, of course, the notion of distilling entanglement. And strangely enough, you cannot construct recurrence protocols that. So, in the normal case, when you don't have superselection rules, you take two copies and you map them to one by this recurrence method, and typically this always converges to a signal, a maximum entangled state, if you start with an entanglement. But in this case, you need three copies, so it has to do with the fact that you are not allowed to, there are many operations that you are not allowed to implement. Okay, so this is an example of distillation. So what we do is start with this state. So it's some kind of a normal form. So any state can be brought into this form by local filtering operations. So I mean by this. So. This is somehow the state space. So when W is 1 and V is equal to 0, then we have a completely mixed state. Okay, so this state is the completely mixed state. So this state is really, so for this state, W is equal to 0 and V is equal to 1. So this is really the maximally entangled state in the sense of it has maximal values. And of course, we have all the other ones in between. Now you can ask the questions, what can I do if I allow local filtering operations? And if you allow local filtering operations, you can somehow only go in that direction, somehow in this direction. But what you would like to do is to go from the state here to here, for example, because you would like to increase the entanglement. So when you have only local filtering operations, you cannot do anything. Now this is the case of like when you have two copies, and you map two copies to one, and somehow you can map this one to maximum entanglement state, but this one not, because this one will go here. If you have three copies, then it's clear that there's some kind of two fixed points of your map. So if you have three copies of your state and you add them to one, you have two fixed points. So it will converge. So when you start with an entangled state, it will converge to the maximally entangled state. Now if you start with a separable state that has some variance, so it's the separable but not local state, it will always converge to the state that you have encoded already a lot of times. But W is 1 and D is 1. So these are really two fixed points of your map. So these are the two maximally entangled states in that particular region. So one for the separable and the other one for the entangled case. Okay, I think this is what I wanted to say.
Lots of time for questions.
I don't know, you have to ask it. Who has said that?
What is her name?
It's something with the fact that if you want to blossom, you have to limit yourself, you have to constrain yourself to very specific things, and then only you will be able to grow and to do interesting things.
That's a direct translation. More questions? No.
Will you have any, if you comment at all on more general situations?
I have not thought about non-obvious situations at all. I think it's much more complicated. In this case, everything was simple, exactly due to this direct sum structure. But I think you would also get some direct sum structure. But maybe you can comment. What is a non-obvious structure?
Just for a couple of
you guys speak up.
You get a direct sum of the least four representations, right? So maybe that relates to the question I'm going to ask, which is can you use something like the most city space?
So what is the question?
Can you do something in multiplicity space?
So what is multiplicity space?
Well, so suppose because you've got many blocks of the same size, right? It seems like your results block in that case.
Yes, but of course, so you will have entanglement of these blocks and then... But I...
Yeah, you don't have to go beyond the analysis. No, that's important. As long as some blocks in some sense.
They're not...
Maybe they're not. In general, some blocks are
in the sense. No, these blocks are different in the sense.
That's just the one problem with the non-dealing group, which you can deal with blocks.
Yeah, I don't know, I've not thought about Malawi reviews. It's too hard.
We have an easier question.
You still have the visuals when you were dealing with the EBC state?
Yes.
How do you take the visuals? Show an example of.
Ah, yes, so just we get exactly the same thing, but with a known face. So this. So there was a third party who had prepared it for you, and it was a plus or a minus sign. What you do is just prepare exactly the same thing, but with a plus sign. And then you will get some information, so not all. So it's really, again, you will not get, cannot reveal the bit with unit probability, but with some probability you will get a good guess. So it's larger than just guessing. So that's the resource. Yes, sir.
Can you write the theorem in
that state in the theorem
of breaking the Lorentz theorem? Can you write the theorem about breaking the Lorentz theorem? But which theorem?
The theorem that's
the
state that
is given in the and then you convert it to this product of 0 not 1 0
yes.
With the binomial state. Question is whether you can write that with location and not as operators.
I think you can convert it outside the sequence. You can run it in the two things.
In the case of dual states, for the initial entanglement, the analysis. Is there a set of variances in the
non-synthetic?
You know that you can characterize entanglements by set by entanglement monomers, and it's not a synthetic.
Yes. So some Schmidt coefficients.
Yeah.
Yes.
So do you have
of course, so
more measures?
Yes, but it's just you cannot change any weight of these blocks. So all these probabilities of the blocks. So the sum of the Schmidt coefficients in each block have to be just constant. But the nice thing in the asymptotic limit is that you don't care about the exact kinds, the exact probabilities, because they will converge to some kind of Gaussian distribution, so there's only one number remaining. But if you're in the final case, you need to specify all the probabilities in each block.
Yes, so will there be more measures of variance?
Yes, there will be n of them. Like we, for each block there is one.
But are you asking in the nearest product regime, is there some correction term of variance? Is that what you're getting at?
That's one of them.
Yep. Yes.
Should we?
Yes, but if you're interested in exact results, and then there's. It's only the infinite case that is interesting.
No, but I think what Gilad's asking, if you think about deviating away from this product, the Gaussian, it'll still be near Gaussian. So it diverges Gaussian from the limit as angular infinity. But it's near Gaussian, so you could use other terms. You don't need all the terms. You should be able to use, say, skewness or something.
But I don't see how you can even get new monotones out of that. But it could be.
I don't know. I think that's the issue.
I don't know. Yes.
In the question with the non-abelian case, I think your analysis goes through. Like said, that your variance is not enough any more than one, because essentially you need all the variables of the algebra, not the only one. But I think the whole thing goes.
Yes, it's separate. I have somebody who's interested in moving.
So I'm not sure if this is a silly question or not, but you use the term non-locality of an entanglement at one point. And in that situation, I think you showed us two states that cannot be distinguished by LSSC under the restriction of superselection. You were talking about the state that can be prepared when you were referring to non-locality.
Yes.
Okay. So there's another use of that term, which is state that can't distinguish.
Yes.
And this example of denying states to qubits is one wherein you could locally prepare any one of them, but you can't distinguish which one you have. So I was wondering if there might be an example of that kind of phenomenon within the context of superselection.
I'm sure, of course.
You're sure that there is?
Yeah,
but I can imagine examples of states I can't locally distinguish, but I think those same states, all the examples I think of, I also can't locally prepare them. Whereas Venice.
So you're interested in a state that you can prepare locally that you cannot distinguish?
Well, a set of states, each of which I can prepare locally.
Yes, but if you can prepare your states locally, then somehow you can completely forget about superselection. And then you write everything in terms of the 0-1 mode. Then there's nothing. Then there's no issue in talking about superselections. If you're only interested in states, that you can prepare locally. But they all have constant local quantum. So of course you can prepare your state if you have superselection rules, but
yeah.
You can do everything. So if you have superselection rules, you can do everything when you you can do everything that you can do without superselection rules. But you can do more, and this more is really that you have more restrictions. It's somehow less. But I say more because you can use it for cryptographic applications.
Mentioned non-locality in the context of your superselection rules, the possibility to prepare locally the states under these constraints. Now, the usual entanglement would be the possibility of preparing it within quantum mechanics of the superselection rule, and the even stronger version of non-locality would be the possibility to prepare it even with any kind of hypothetical local resource, not the invariants. We also generalize invariables to include the idea of super selection. Beyond quantum mechanics, but still with several species.
So it's a question to limit your variable model such that.
So that the only opportunity is also super selection, but if you go outside of quantum mechanics.
And you mean a nominal thing, right? So you, or
you could test the open swap, and then you would be probably, if you would be on violation of some kind of rating model.
I don't think so, because your model is strict at the time.
Yeah, so you also would need to restrict the leap by that open model leap by it. They also have to put in some kind of consideration. I don't know how you do that.
No, but it would be more limited than when you have when you don't have super selection. So I don't see why you could find a economic model.
But it wouldn't be a standard economic model, it would be a
modified model. Ah, so you have to modify your economic models such that they take into account the super selection.
Yes, yes, sure.
Yes, this must be possible, but I don't know. Yeah. I think it's hard.
Okay, more questions? Resume at 11:15. No, it's just here.